News Production Fellowship. Go to democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
It's 7:59. This is KBOO Portland, and happy birthday to Oregon, 160 years old today. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, it's Voices from the Edge with host Joanne Hardesty. She'll be updating us on yesterday's city council vote to take Portland out of the Joint Terrorism Task Force. At 9 o'clock, Teresa Mitchell hosts Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. At 10, the Heather McCoy Show features Josh Bivens from the Economic Policy Institute looking at Airbnb's effect on local rents. And in the second half, Catherine Radeka and Linda Winnett from Family Promise of Clark County talk about what you can do to help houseless people. At 11 on Between the Covers, David Naiman speaks with poet Alicia Rabins on her new book of poetry, Fruit Geode. And at 11:30 on Words and Pictures, the creative team of writer Pamela Ribbon and Portland artist Kat Ferris talk about their new graphic novel, My Boyfriend is a Bear. Great lineup today. Help us out by keeping these shows on the air by going to kboo.fm and click on donate. It's 8 o'clock.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor La Segua, running February 7th to March 2nd at the Milagro Theater in Portland. La Segua is a Central American cautionary folktale of a young, beautiful woman whom philandering men encounter on their way back home. Her beauty decays into a horror that drives the men mad. The play tells the story of a beautiful woman who was haunted by the specter of La Segua and takes a hard look at Costa Rican values, including ambition, hypocrisy, and follows themes of machismo, vanity, and narcissism. Again, that's La Segua, running February 7th to March 2nd on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights at 7:30 and Sundays at 2 p.m. at the Milagro Theater, 525 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Radio is proud to co-sponsor the 29th annual Cascade Festival of African Films, happening Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, now through Saturday, March 2nd. Most films will show at the Moriarty Arts and Humanities Building, Room 104 at PCC Cascade Campus, 705 North Killingsworth Street in Portland. Again, that's the 29th annual Cascade Festival of African Films, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, now through Saturday, March 2nd. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right.
Good morning, good morning. Welcome to Voices from the Edge. I am Joanne Hardesty, and it's my pleasure to be here with you this morning. I thought today we would do a debriefing on the city council vote, the historic city council vote yesterday to remove Portland from the Portland Joint Terrorism Task Force. And what does that mean for the community and whether or not we are safer without it? Want to say that the vote came in with a 3-2 vote, 3 in favor of pulling us out and 2 in opposition. If you were there, I got to tell you, we had the city council chambers filled to the gill. The first floor was filled, the balcony was filled, and an overflow conference room was filled with standing room only. So it is clear that the people in the city of Portland really cared about this issue greatly and showed up in droves as we had asked them to do. It was very interesting over the last couple of days because you may know on Tuesday we had a work session where we invited the FBI and the Department of Justice and Portland Police to come, as well as invited a panel of community members. Some came in from out of town to really talk about both the pros and cons of our involvement. For folks who don't know, The Joint Terrorism Task Force was actually created back in 1997. It wasn't until after 9/11 and the introduction of the Patriot Act that the Joint Terrorism Task Force began to be very problematic because of the enormous amount of information that the federal government was collecting on citizens who were not involved in any kind of criminal behavior. Having Portland police officers involved, we have been told over and over, they were not acting outside of Oregon state law, and they were walled off from any federal investigations that would lead to implications around immigration or immigration status. Now, it was hard to not interrupt when you hear that kind of nonsense, quite frankly, because one of the things that I know is, like, if you start a investigation before, if you're just gathering information, you wouldn't start off knowing what someone's immigration status is. And so to imply that somehow Portland police officers would never, ever, ever be engaged in activity that would lead them to either identify someone's immigration status or act on that information just didn't pass the smell test. I think what the testimony showed overwhelmingly, and I have to say this is my third time participating in a city council meeting in regard to the Portland Joint Tourism Task Force. Of course, my very first time having a vote on the city council to be able to have an impact on the outcome. But at each of the three meetings that I've been to, the overwhelming testimony were for people who were fearful of our being involved and engaged in this deep undercover policing operation known as the Portland Joint Tourism Task Force. And therefore, overwhelming testimony. Yesterday, 38 people testified in person. Only two testified in favor of keeping us in the Joint Tourism Task Force. In fact, we did get letters across the board from people that were on the pro side and the con side. But overwhelmingly, again, our respected community groups who have been working on this issue nonstop since we last were pulled back into it in 2015. And so I really want to thank those community groups like Unite Oregon, led by Casey Jama, Portland Cop Watch, led by Dan Handelman, the League of Women Voters, Jobs with Justice. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. Jewish Voices for Peace have been very, very strong and very active. And so it was really interesting watching and listening to the positioning of the city council, because basically law enforcement sided with law enforcement, which shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. But the community came out in really full force and really made their voices heard. And what were the primary concerns? No surprises. Primary concerns were people, especially people who are doing organized activism. We know that the FBI has a long history of infiltrating groups that are working towards a more just society, and whether those groups are organizations like the NAACP or whether they're groups like 350 PDX or pro-abortion organizations, the FBI has this very, very, very long history of really infiltrating those organizations, trying to disrupt those organizations, trying to incite people to violence. And to me, it was just mind-boggling to believe that based on that history, people could say that we would be safer remaining within the Portland Joint Tourism Task Force. But luckily, I had two colleagues who agreed with me, and we made up a majority of the city council. So what's the next steps? The next steps are for myself, Mayor Wheeler, and Chief Outlaw to come together and come develop a proposal for how we make that disconnection happen within the next 60 days and bring that proposal back to the city council for adoption. One of the key things that we did was to make sure that this would be city council law that would be that would have to be followed. So we made sure that it was covered within policy and within the legal requirements. And so I look forward to working with the mayor. I look forward to working with Chief Outlaw. But at the end of the day, Portlanders spoke. They spoke and said, we no longer want to be driven by fear. fear of the other, fear of our neighbors, fear of the unknown. We would much rather spend our limited resources actually getting to know our neighbors, getting to build relationships with people in our community. And we refuse to be driven by fear and by othering people. And I think that message came across very, very, very clear. I have to say, part of this process really did surprise me. I was certainly surprised when the Department of Justice, Billy Williams, actually said he refused to actually respond to my question about whether or not he supported Oregon's sanctuary law. But I asked that question because I had found in my opinion piece that he had written a year ago stating his opposition to the sanctuary law because we had law enforcement officers in the state who would not call ICE when they had someone in custody who was not documented. And that is the law in the state of Oregon. So I couldn't understand why he found it so difficult to actually embrace our sanctuary law. I think that both he and Wren Cannon, the regional director for the FBI here in Oregon, both made the case very strongly for why we should get out and why we should not trust that the FBI and the Department of Justice really had the best interests of people who don't have power in our community. Asking both of those gentlemen directly whether they supported the sanctuary law, they both stated that they support federal law, and there is no sanctuary law in federal law. And knowing what we know about the current federal administration, the heightened fear that community members have is severe. And so to have federal agents try to tell us both sides that we respect Oregon's laws and we don't make Portland police officers do anything outside of Oregon state law, at the same time saying, but we don't recognize your sanctuary law because we operate under federal guidelines. And so to me, that was not sufficient to make me sway from knowing that we needed to get out of the Joint Terrorism Task Force. If you're listening and you were there yesterday or you watched it online or if you emailed or called or texted or did something to support our efforts yesterday, give me a call here at 503-231-8187. Love to know what your experience was from where you sat. From where I sat, it was fabulously wonderful to see an organized community come out with one voice. It was a very diverse audience. And for the most people I've seen in City Hall in my short time in that building. And so I thank you to the incredible folks who really went above and beyond to make sure that their voices were heard and that we brought in people who could talk about what their real lived experience was. Because I think rarely do we get the opportunity to hear from people who've been impacted by bad criminal justice policy and especially by actions that have been taken by the Joint Terrorism Task Force and by the FBI and Portland Police and our community. It's really ironic that we are in this place where we cannot trust information that comes out of law enforcement databases. Because I know personally, when I get information from Portland Police Bureau, I have to check it against some outside source. Because what I have come to experience is that if it's developed by Portland Police Bureau, that information tends to not paint the accurate picture of what's really taking place. And a great example of that was the auditor's report last year on the Portland Gang Enforcement Unit and acknowledging that 54% of their stops were of people who were African American. And to this day, there's been no analysis or explanation as to how that could possibly be in a city with a 6% African American population. And so I look forward to hearing from you. Like, what are the components that we need to put into this ordinance that we'll bring back to City Hall that will make sure that we have a wall? I think that if there is a terrorist threat, My expectation would be that the FBI would notify Portland Police, and then Portland Police would take appropriate action as it related to that individual threat. I in no way see it being a problem that Portland police officers aren't sitting around a table with FBI agents and Homeland Security and ICE and other federal agencies that, again, don't recognize or respect our sanctuary city law. If you were not able to make the city council yesterday, you could actually watch the entire session online. I have it posted on my Commissioner Joanne Hardesty Facebook page, but you could also go to City Hall Clerk's office page and be able to download it from there. It is always wonderful to be able to go back and review what has taken place. In my mind, I think that faith leaders, I think Asian Pacific Islanders, Muslims, Jewish folks, people, African Americans, Black Lives Matters movements, anyone who's actually standing up and fighting for justice, I think is much safer today because of Portland's action. We are still officially in the Joint Terrorism Task Force, but within 60 days, that will no longer be the case. And I am adamant about no, like, halfway in, like we did under Mayor Adams. We are totally out. And when the mayor asked, well, why does it have to be either or? It has to be either or because we have to feel safe as people of color, as immigrants, as refugees, as low-income people, as people with no power to inform our political process. We must feel safe in our interaction in our community without fear of over-policing and over-aggression by either federal agents based on the rhetoric coming out of D.C. or based on what is taking place in our local community. I know time and time again locally, when we've asked for information from the FBI, and I think Commissioner Fritz did an excellent job of articulating this yesterday, we have asked for information. The FBI knew that they were supposed to give city council reports on an annual basis of the activity that Portland police officers were involved in and any threat assessments that they had been able to close up until that point. And what I heard from my colleague, Commissioner Fritz, yesterday was that until the FBI knew that we were moving forward to move out of the Joint Terrorism Task Force, they had never gotten one report from the FBI. In fact, I remember under Sam Adams, when they were pretending to provide reports, it was really no information at all. Basically, we can't tell you what we can't tell you, but trust us, everything is fine, and we are operating within the law. I don't think that that's a method that anybody would use to determine, to hold somebody accountable for the activity and the resources that we're spending. And because this has been a consistent theme, the FBI has been much more open once they knew we were considering pulling out than they've ever been in the history of this terrorism task force. And under the current federal leadership, it is clear that the FBI has a totally different focus today. Now, what they tried to tell us their focus was is on interrupting white supremacist hate group and white nationalist groups. And I have to tell you, that's another one of those, like, you go, really? Based on what? And when I asked, well, did you open any investigations on Portland police after we found Portland police protecting white nationalists at the expense of counter-protesters who showed up? Have you opened investigations based on the fact that Portland police actually physically attacked white nationalist protesters, and there's video and there's all kind of documentation? One gentleman almost lost his life. Thank goodness he had a helmet on. Otherwise, that rocket would have gone right through his head and killed him instantly. And of course, the answer to all those questions is no, because they have this cozy relationship around the table that's called the Joint Tourism Task Force. And so again, many, many reasons for us to be gone from the Tourism Task Force, and in my mind, no good reasons for us to stay in it. I'd love to hear from you. Give me a call at 503-231-8187. What's your thinking on this? Did you get your voice heard yesterday? Or are you ready now to kind of weigh in and see what's the next step? I absolutely agree that we live in a time where bad things can happen and people of ill will can and will do some horrendous things. I was reminded by Amy Goodman that we are at the one-year anniversary of the Parkland shootings, and those students are still active in trying to get gun control legislation passed at the national level. And so it's really clear that we live in a society now where it's not surprising when one of these incidents happen. I wish it wasn't as regular as it is, because it just breaks your heart to know that students today go to school with this fear of an active shooter in their school. I mean, just like in my day where we got under the desk because that was going to save us from a nuclear attack. Nowadays, we have students who are learning from elementary school how to stay blockade in their classroom while an active shooter is going through the school. I mean, I think it's a sad state of affairs, but I don't think we can allow fear to be what motivates public policy. And I do believe that the Joint Tourism Task Force is a great example of public policy motivated by fear. And I know that police like to sell fear, because if you can sell fear, then you can sell the need for more cops. You can sell the need for less civil liberties, and you can sell the need for, yes, we killed somebody, that was an accident, but, you know, it's the price you pay when you're trying to be safe. I think that we have been down that road way too long, and it's time for us to come back with a much more humane, people-centric approach to how we keep ourselves safe. My big thing is if we want to be safe, then you should know your neighbors. You should know the people that live around you. You should know the people that your children hang out with. You should know whether or not people are going to houses that have guns in them. I mean, there are many, many ways for us to be safe. But at the end of the day, you know, as I said earlier, people of ill will and have and will continue to do bad things that we will have to be responsive to. So we're going to go to the phone line. We have a caller. If you want to join us, give us a call at 503-231-8187. Good morning, Liz. Welcome to KBOO.
Thank you. I just wanted to call and say congratulations and thank you so much for all your work. And I feel so much better about my city since this has, you know, I'm just thrilled and surprised that it happened. And thank you.
Well, thank you. I'm laughing because you said you were surprised. Why were you surprised?
Well, you just, it's the right thing, and you just hope, you know, but it's so good. So if you would, you know, talk about the next steps, that would be great. I'll take that off the air.
Okay, thank you so much. I will certainly do that. Again, if you want to join the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. And so one of the things that I put in the resolution was a requirement that I work with the mayor with consulting with Chief Outlaw to come back to the city council with the step-by-step approach that we're going to take to remove ourselves, to disconnect ourselves from the Joint Tourism Task Force. So it's just a matter of what are going to be the appropriate steps. We know we have two police officers that will need to be reassigned. We will need to make sure that they are no longer in communication on a day-to-day basis. And we should also develop a protocol for who would be the contact if the FBI is able to identify a credible threat that falls within Oregon state law, who would be the appropriate person to be contacted by the FBI? The FBI could pick up the phone and call Assistant Chief Day, would be my recommendation. But I will talk to Mayor Wheeler and find out if he agrees to that, and we will consult with Chief Outlaw. I'm going to go back to the phone line. Good morning, Dave. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning. Hello, Dave. Are you there? I think we may have lost Dave, but maybe Dave will call back. I think it's important that, no worry. I think it's important that we are very clear and that we do this as cleanly and as quickly as possible. I don't see any reason to delay the withdrawal at all. And I'm sure 60 days is more than sufficient time for anyone to be able to close up whatever they're working on or transfer that information over to someone who will continue on with that task force. I think also we were asked like some real false choices when you think about one of the questions that kept coming up is, well, should we get out of all the task force that we are in with the FBI? And I really appreciated Michael German, who is a former FBI agent who is strongly opposed to the Joint Terrorism Task Force. He, in fact, works with the Brennan Institute currently and came very specifically, and actually is the third time he also has testified here in Portland. So as a former FBI agent, he is absolutely adamant that the Joint Terrorism Task Force is a rogue operation that basically does not follow the law. And they have a very, very broad net, which they grab up lots of information and don't use that information and then hold on to that information indefinitely. I think that's the fear of a lot of folks. And I think we have another caller on the line. Hello, Dave again. Are you there?
Hi, Joanne. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Good morning, Dave. Welcome to KBOO.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you very much. Back at you.
Love you. there was an incident when the Joint Terrorism Task Force was first put into effect way back.
Right.
I'm an activist with Jobs with Justice, and we were going to go out to Beaverton to a construction job where the carpenters, the people were being pretty intimidated, so we were going to go back up the workers there. And we got there and there was no workers there. And the employer, it turns out, the employer told the union that the Joint Terrorism Task Force warned them that us, Jobs with Justice communists, were going to go out there and subvert their workers.
Wow. So, yes, this was early on, so shortly after 9/11, when they really...
I think so. Mm-hmm. I'm bad about dates and time.
You and me both. Don't feel bad about that.
It was right after it was instituted.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was pretty dormant, right? I think it was voted in the law back in 1998, and it kind of sat dormant until 9/11. And then it didn't do too much until after the Patriot Act, right? And as you may remember, most of our congressional leaders at that time didn't even read it before they voted on it. And so that's what's created this real disconnect between actually terrorist threats and government creating illusion of threat. Well, but we did it, right?
This was right after 9/11 then.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes perfect sense because, that's what we were selling. We were selling fear. Fear of anybody that wasn't white male American, middle class.
Yeah.
Well, luckily, people are starting to see through that fear. That fear-based policymaking, I hope, is coming to an end. Certainly in the city of Portland, but maybe across the country. I know San Francisco was first in pulling out, and they actually used Portland as a model when they pulled out. The difference is that they were a united front. Their entire city council, the police chief, all said that they needed to pull out, and they did.
Wow.
And it was.
Well, I'm glad you did it.
Well, thank you very much. We did it. It was a good victory for the people of Portland who believe we can do so much better than that. Thank you so much.
Look at you.
Appreciate your call. Have a great day, Dave. Good morning, Bob. Welcome to K-Boo. Susan. Good morning, Susan. Welcome to K-Boo.
Good morning, Joanne.
How are you?
Just had a quick question regarding the vote yesterday to get out of the Joint Task Force. Did the Portland Police Bureau and Chief Outlaw have any official or unofficial position on that? I didn't have a chance to view the proceedings, so if it's I apologize. But
no worries. No, it's all good. Yes, they did have an official position, which was strongly recommending we stay in the Joint Terrorism Task Force. They had the two officers who are assigned available via phone to answer questions. Chief Outlaw did a video because she's in D.C. This week. And they were very, very clear that they wanted us to stay part of the Joint Terrorism Task Force. And again, in my opinion, I believe that fear was what they were trying to sell us. The reason we need to be there is because we're living in these fearful times and there's terrorism activity happening everywhere. And if we're not at the table, then we're not first to get that information. But I find that a false argument, but that is that was their position.
Okay, thank you for sharing that information. And hopefully they are on board with the people voted on desires through the commissioners. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, they have no choice now because, again, they work for the city of Portland, and this is going to be city of Portland policy, and therefore they will have to follow the policy that's been set by the city council. So no choice in that matter at all. And by the way, let me tell you what's coming up today on Naboo. At 9, Teresa Mitchell hosts Press Watch, The News You're Not Supposed to Know. At 10, The Heather McCoy Show features Josh Bivens from the Economic Policy Institute looking at Airbnb's effect on local rents. In the second half, Catherine Radiaka and Linda Winnett from Family Promise of Clark County talk about what you can do to help houseless persons. At 11 on Between the Covers, David Naiman speaks with poet Alicia Rabins on her new book of poetry, Fruit Geode. At 11:30 on Words and Pictures, the creative team of writer Pamela Ribbon and Portland artist Kat Ferris talk about their new graphic novel, My Boyfriend is a Bear. That's what's coming up today on K-Boo, and we are greatly appreciative of your ongoing support. To become a member, just go to kboo.fm and click the button marked Donate. You can become a member there. We appreciate you. I'm going to go back to the phone line. Good morning, Trout. Welcome to K-Boo. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Joanne. Long time no see. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I can't tell you how I was in Mexico, and I flew back the day of the election. I voted before I went down.
Thank you.
And so before I got on my flight from Puerto Vallarta to come back, I saw that you had the projections and all that, and then I got back, and I can't tell you with all this crazy stuff the last couple of years especially, but I personally don't trust the FBI, the CIA, none of, you know. I'm very pleased to see this happening, and thank you so much from the bottom of my heart.
Oh, you are very welcome. Absolutely. This was a team effort, and as I reminded people yesterday, community organizations, myself included, working with community organizations, never stopped working on this after Mayor Charlie Hales voted to have us rejoin. And so this has been something that community folks have wanted for a long time, really led by Unite Oregon and Portland Cop Watch and League of Women Voters. I mean, it's funny. There's like 50-plus organizations that have worked on this nonstop. So I feel proud to have been part of that effort over the years.
Yeah.
So I knew we had community support for it. I just didn't know if we had the political courage on the city council to make it happen. And I'm glad to see we did.
Yeah, it's understandable. Yeah, again, thank you so much. And I read the list of organizations. I was very
touched by that as well.
Pretty impressive. Yes, yes. We're going to do good things here, right? Regardless of what's happening at the national level, we have an obligation to do good stuff in Portland and here in Oregon. So thank you. Appreciate your call.
Yep.
Welcome back. Glad you're back.
Okay.
Take care. Good morning, Camilo. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning. Good morning. I want to say congratulations for this and for many of the other achievements that you've had leading the community. We just finished the work on the Portland Clean Energy Fund that you were behind. And what I want to ask today is that we know that Portland police involvement with federal agencies is problematic, and we can be very satisfied about getting out of the Joint Terrorism Task Force. But there are many other issues that are problematic with Portland police, and you know that. Like, where have we gotten with the consent decree and the issue of Portland's poor treatment of mentally ill situations?
Well, right.
And I wonder.
Now remember, we don't have a consent decree. We have a settlement agreement. And the difference is huge. A consent decree means that there's somebody that's hired that answers to the court, and pretty much the community is disconnected from that process. I think the bottom line is that we should just call the settlement agreement a huge failure and just end it right now, because we've been in this since 2013 when the Department of Justice came. And what we know is that just about to a person, every person killed by Portland police was suffering from a mental health issue. So when we get reports that say Portland police is doing better because we now have this behavioral health unit, I find that disingenuous to say that to the public. We cannot have it both ways. The fact that we don't kill all people who suffer mental health issues does not make us a model agency for engaging people who are suffering from mental health issues. So for me, because I am in charge of the 911 call center, my plan is to refocus the 911 call center so that they are sending the right first responders for the right situation. We need to make sure that we have access to mental health professionals as well as triage nurses so that those calls are really being filtered to make sure that we are not sending police that are going to exacerbate a mental health crisis when they show up yelling and armed and aggressive to someone who that's the last thing they need. In fact, we just went to Eugene a couple of weeks ago to visit a program there called CAHOOTS, which is a mental health direct service provider on the street. They work with mental health professionals to go out and triage community members living on the street to assist them in getting their mental health needs met. Law enforcement do not go on those calls. If they need to get a police officer there, they have radios and they have the ability to call them. But it really is a community-to-community, peer-to-peer focused intervention. And Eugene has done an incredible job of growing this program, but it's 30 years old in Eugene. And so we've looked at that, and we're starting conversations about what does it look like to reform who shows up at those calls. And so know that I am very, very, very concerned about the number of people who lose their life when they call for help. No one should lose their life because they call for help. And we have to do a better job of making sure that we're not sending people who are trained for one thing to intervene in another.
So will there be a place for community advisory boards in this process?
In what process?
Developing a better system for police supervision of police on these mental health disturbances.
Well, as you know, I don't have the police bureau in my portfolio, so I am actually fixing what happens without actually even engaging with the police. I don't know if you read Willamette Week last week where they talked about the 911 system.
Yes.
And the overload of calls that are coming into the 911 call center for people who are basically just uncomfortable with people who are outside their door or living on their street or camping outside their business. And so that article last week or the week before was really a snapshot into how dysfunctional our system is. Today, if you call 911, the potential for Portland police, Portland fire, and an ambulance to show up are pretty big, especially when the 911 operator doesn't quite know what the appropriate resource is to send. So many times we send all three, and that's just a total waste of public safety resources. And so all of these agencies have advisory committees, is what how I would answer that question. The reforms that I'm talking about doing will be done within the rest of the public safety first response system. I have all the other first responder responsibilities with the exception of police. So I'm going to work on reforming the ones that I have responsibility for, which will, in fact, reform the police. And then what will...
I'm a retired mental health professional, and if you ever want some participation, I'll be happy to offer it to you.
Well, I appreciate that. And in fact, I think, you know, you should just contact my office and we'll just put you on a short list of folks who have that background. Because we are going to have to tap into the experts around triaging these kind of calls to make sure that we are redesigning the system in a way that makes sure that the right first responder shows up at the right time at the right scene.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate your call.
Bye.
Have a great day. 503-231-8187 is the number to call if you'd like to join the conversation. Good morning, Crystal. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi, good morning, Joanne.
Good morning.
Hi. Am I echoing?
You're fine.
Yes. Oh, yes, I guess I am.
No, you sound fine.
It's like we've been doing this for years. Oh, my gosh. So in lieu of, like, just screaming about how upset I am every time Ted Wheeler opens his mouth and demeans us more and more, like, speaking of white privilege, like, why don't I go to these meetings when there's the security? I remember when we didn't have security there. And then, you know, white guys on the white from a council going, you know, we know better than you, but you have all the experts. And so my question, luckily you gave me a homework assignment to give input.
Yes.
And you're having us call in for that. So last guy was talking about boards, and I was wondering, this 60 days, this is just to get the basics in place, right? So it's law, and you just need to cut off the service that JTTF was at this point, and then later we can design a bigger plan.
That is absolutely right. I mean, it's the bottom line is just how do we withdraw the two officers who have been assigned to the JTTF, right? So the first thing we do is reassign them. They no longer work as part of that task force, right? Then the second thing is just to make sure that we have disconnected any kind of data systems from the FBI and Portland Police Bureau, right, to ensure that we're not continuing to share information in that intimate fashion. And then three, have a designated person within the Portland Police Bureau that will be called if the FBI is able to identify a real threat to public safety so that they have a direct line to be able to address those issues. They act like if we're not in the task force that they'll just never be able to communicate with us, and like they don't have telephones or internet.
So speaking of telephones, basically what we had before,
right,
which it worked just fine. We were so my input in this right now anyway is to because if their argument for us to stay in was that, oh, we need to be safe, everyone's in fear, then we need to engage our neighbors more. And the focus, there's already plans in place, there's already cities doing it, but ultimately we need to start from day one while we have this push to get people involved in like places like the Sunnyside Community Center. Yes. This is Portland. This is what I remember before.
Right.
I don't know. Yeah.
You're absolutely right. No, I mean, it's the best way to keep us safe is for us to know our neighbors, right? And know our community. That's the best way to be safe, right? Because you can't be unsafe in an area where you know the people and you know the norms. That's the best way for us to be safe and to have this illusion of safety because we have a secret police operation taking place is just that, an illusion.
Yep. One last thing.
All right.
the experts, the people that they were rattling off yesterday at the wonderful rally, all the people who've been working on this forever.
Yes.
I would love to have more open meetings with them via these public spaces, like the, you know, the library or the city hall, and have people attend them, and then give, that's a good way for them to give input too, for these organizations that are ultimately helping us write policy.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's really important that the public weighs in. I mean, and I think, you know, the public weighed in very loud and clearly over the last couple of days at City Hall, right? So it is clear that for most of the public that chose to participate, we heard loud and clearly that people just did not trust the FBI.
I'm right? I feel like we've had these rallies before and some things have to shift. We're very, very aware now. Most people didn't even know about the JTTF, except those that are being targeted by the JTTF.
That's why
we need to continue this conversation.
Absolutely right. So that's why, like, venues like KBOO are so ideal, right, to actually spread that information. But you're right, community-based organizations, any kind of community group could invite in speakers to actually go deeper into how the FBI has traditionally operated and how they've operated in the city of Portland. I mean, unfortunately, we have two quote-unquote convictions for terrorist activity, both led and supported by the FBI, right? So it's kind of hard to see, to believe that the FBI is keeping us safer when, in fact, they were the ones that actually facilitated the two quote-unquote terrorist convictions that we have.
Mohammed.
Yes, and then the Portland 7.
Yeah.
Both of those cases would not have happened without FBI intervention and resources and support. And so,
yeah.
Right, it's easy for me, but for a lot of people, they have to be able to connect the dots.
Well, since today is March for Our Lives anniversary, I guess we could put it that way,
mm-hmm.
This is what the JTTF did to our young people. And so the young people have to be involved in this too. I mean, this could be school curriculum.
Thank you so much. No, I appreciate your call. You're absolutely right. It could be a school. Well, I mean, young people have always led the way when it comes to social justice movements. And this issue is not any different. In fact, you might remember it was the young people at Portland Public School at Jefferson High School who organized an opposition to school resource officers being paid for out of Portland Public School general fund dollars.
And they ultimately won. I mean, they kept fighting it. Yeah.
They ultimately won, right? We are still talking about federal and state gun control laws because those students didn't go away after their school was shot up, right? Those students continue to organize and organize other students. And so it has always been that way, that young people are the ones that come up with the action and actually are fearless in taking on those actions. I even remind people the civil rights movement wouldn't have happened without young kids, 7 to 14, willing to go to jail every night so that their parents wouldn't lose their job or lose their housing, right? But the kids went to jail and their parents supported them doing that. And so we have to get out of the habit of thinking that young people are like a separate subset. They, in fact, are part of the core of us when we're organizing to make change happen.
Indeed.
Thank you so much for your call. I greatly appreciate it. Now you've got
your
marching orders. You got your homework. Go out there and do good stuff. You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Good morning, Steve. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning, Joanne.
Good morning.
Nice talking with you again.
Likewise.
Hey, I have a question just about sort of a small issue related to the homeless crisis we're addressing. Is it? And I'm really disengaged, except that I can't help it by the optics, the litter. I just drove through the Banfield,
right.
And it's a disgrace. And is anyone addressing the waste management issue related to houseless people? And the propensity of debris and never mind the biohazards,
right.
The potential cholera epidemics where you know, human waste is not managed properly. But how do we address this on a micro level, recognizing that, you know, for liberals, you know, the good is the enemy of the perfect, so we shouldn't
right.
set up.
Well, the good news is that there
shouldn't set up waste management
right.
unless we address it holistically, and I don't think that's proper.
No, I agree with you. I mean, I think the reality is that we're not acting like we're in an emergency, right? Because in an emergency, you would bring all the resources necessary to triage people where they are and then to make sure that their basic needs were met, right? That's what you do in an emergency. We are not operating as if we are in a housing crisis, and we're going into our, what, fifth year of this identified housing crisis. So, yes, I agree with you about the garbage and the bio waste. There are staff people at the city who are managing bio waste disposal, garbage pickup. The mayor has authorized, like, I don't remember how many, but like hundreds of more garbage cans around the city. It is my view, and I've always supported that what we should be doing is hiring houseless people and providing them with training to actually go around and pick up the garbage and the bio waste. And so it's a win-win, right? You have people who, it's just part of the community that they're living in, and they will work with the community to actually keep the location clean. I mean, I think that's one of our biggest unmet needs at the moment is people being able to have basic hygiene services, right? All of us have to use the restroom, but all of us don't have access to a restroom. And so being able to provide mobile showers, mobile laundries would go a great deal towards helping people transition off the street a lot faster. So we have some resources, but not enough.
When I contacted Metro with, you know, with my truck, I wanted to clean up a formerly occupied homeless camp.
Right.
Metro, but I didn't want to incur the expense. I wanted to transport it. Metro didn't have any program to allow citizen engagement. If you want to clean up a camp in your neighborhood
right.
that's been abandoned, there, you know, how do you work with the city and Metro that has, you know, waste management programs? How do you make sure that you're showing up with sharps and gloves, and when you filled up your truck, you know, you take it there and you're doing a service. You're not incurring, you know, how do we
right? I hear.
Are there other solutions being discussed like that? Because the optics are terrible,
right?
And if all you do, you don't provide any housing, but all you do is remove the eyesores,
right?
You know, then that is progress, and that's you know, progress, not perfection, is
right.
the goal here.
No, I absolutely agree with you. So I would encourage you to call the City of Portland's 211 line, and they will connect you to folks who are actually at the City of Portland currently that are charged with actually working to make those camps better. And just, I mean, I love your idea, because that's what it's going to take. I've always said, if we'd have just gone out originally to the public and said, hey, we got this emergency, we need your help, I thought the public would come up with all kind of creative ideas about how they could help immediately, short term, and then long term, right? But all we ask the public for is money. We don't actually ask for their innovation, their ideas, their volunteer time to help make this better. So thank you.
Solve the optics.
Yeah, exactly. I'm with you. I'm with you on that. Thank you. But I think you solve it by hiring people who are currently houseless. I don't think you hire other folks. Unless, you know, if we're talking volunteers, that's one thing. But I think you hire people who need the income so that they can move from the street into permanently affordable housing, housing they can afford to live in permanently. Looks like we got another caller. Hello, Ron. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning, Joanne. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. How are you today?
I think I'll live through it.
How can you tell?
It's called hope. You know, you all had, I don't know how many organizations and people giving testimony yesterday to leaving the Joint Terrorism Task Force. Did Mayor Wheeler or Nick Fish have any positive information on why we should stay? I mean, other than the fact that they think their opinion is that it makes us safer. Did they have any facts to back that up?
I mean, they both had different ways of saying basically we should stay so that we can bring Portland values to the FBI, which I found a little disingenuous, because two low-level Portland police officers are not going to change the direction of what's happening nationally at the FBI, and certainly aren't going to be able to change the direction of the FBI directors here in Oregon. So I didn't feel like their arguments really held up. They talked about we are safer because we're a part of it, but none of the information either of them gave led me to believe that they made compelling arguments. But I'm a little prejudiced, so you might have to listen to their testimony yourself and come to your own conclusion.
Yeah, I'll do that. But I think what if that's the truth, if that's true what you just said about mm-hmm. their testimony about fact of what why we need JTTF, then they are ridiculous, and they had better start listening to the people if they intend to stay in office. Well, and that's about all I really want to say.
Well, appreciate you calling, and thank you so much. It was a good day yesterday for the people of the city of Portland, but the people of Portland cannot rest on their laurels because we've got a lot more work to do.
That's a fact.
Have a good one. Bye-bye. And so do we have another caller? Excellent, excellent. So we are minus on minutes. I've just got a couple of minutes left. So let me just share with you once again what the next steps will be. I am required to go back to the city council within 59 days with a plan for how we will withdraw Portland from the Joint Tourism Task Force. I don't think that it will be any problem at all coming up with the particulars. Bottom line is we remove the two officers. We make sure that they are disconnected with their data system, so they're not sharing information on a regular basis with the FBI and ICE and other members, Homeland Security and other members of the Joint Terrorism Task Force. And last but not least, we make sure that there are no city resources that are being expended in support of the Joint Tourism Task Force activities. I saw in the paper yesterday that Portland has funded these officers through a federal grant that they will no longer be eligible to receive. And I think that that's absolutely perfect and fine, and as it should be. But if we have this lack of police officers, now's a great opportunity to bring those two officers back, bring the officers back that are working out in the schools as school resource officers, put all those officers, retrain them, and put them on the street, and voila, all of a sudden we will have more police officers to do the job of solving crime and preventing crime. I think that would take care of so many needs in our community, and we won't have to hear Portland Police Union talking about that they're so desperately understaffed. They are not understaffed. They are woefully, inappropriately assigned. And I think the sooner we start thinking about what is the basic job of police, and that is, again, to solve crime and prevent crime. And so I look forward very much to continuing that conversation. I want to thank once again what I see as the lead organizations, Unite Oregon and Portland Cop Watch and League of Women Voters and Jewish Voices for Peace, for really stepping up to make sure that those city council chambers were filled yesterday and people were respectful, but their voices were absolutely heard. Once people knew that the vote was clear, that we were pulling out, people were very, very, very excited. And I certainly appreciate my colleagues not getting annoyed at people's excitement. I am Joanne Hardesty. You've been listening to Voices from the Edge, and I'll see you next week, same place, same station, same time. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Good morning. This is KBOO Portland. It's 8:58. Coming up next, Teresa Mitchell has Press Watch with the news you're not supposed to know. At 10, the Heather McCoy Show features Josh Bivens from the Economic Policy Institute looking at Airbnb's effect on local rents. In the second half, Catherine Radeka and Linda Winnett from Family Promise of Clark County talk about what you can do to help houseless people. At 11 on Between the Covers, David Naiman speaks with poet Alicia Rabins on her new book of poetry, Fruit Geode. And at 11:30 this morning on Words and Pictures, the creative team of writer Pamela Ribbon and Portland artist Kat Ferris talk about their new graphic novel, My Boyfriend is a Bear. All coming up today on KBOO. Go to kboo.fm and click on Donate.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Clinton Street Resistance Series. Every Monday night at the Clinton Street Theater, Monday, February 18th, Clinton Street Resistance will screen Do the Right Thing, the Spike Lee joint which follows a Brooklyn neighborhood's racial tension on a hot summer day. Again, Do the Right Thing, showing Monday, February 18th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the second annual Dance and Resist, Thursday, February 14th at 10 p.m. at Open Signal, Portland Community Media Center. Dance and Resist is Portland's only activist-led live television dance party. For Crying Out Meow Productions is proud to welcome back host and activist Kat Meow Garcia, joined this time by musician DJ Vicky for a night of resistance. Dance and Resist practices reclaiming community space through dance and revolutionary education. There will be a green screen photo booth and costumes are highly encouraged. Again, that's Dance and Resist too. Thursday, February 14th at 10 p.m. till midnight at Open Signal, 2766 Northeast MLK Jr. Boulevard, Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.